Psalm 74. We're going to title this message, it's kind of a difficult text, but it's kind of easy to see what's in it, but we're going to try to pull as much out of it as we can with the Lord's help, obviously. We're going to title it, Why? Why? And the reason why we're going to title it that way is because you look at verse 1, he says, Oh God, why? See? Then you look down at verse 11, Why withdrawest thou thy hand? So you see that the writer is questioning why. And I think at one time or the other, because of different reasons, sometimes we as God's people will indeed question why, especially when calamities come. And the writer in this particular case, his calamity, you know, calamities are different for different people. Do you agree? There are many different kinds of calamities that people face. But his calamity, as you look at the text, seems to be that an invading army had invaded Israel. And they were at the sanctuary and they burnt the sanctuary. That's what you see in the context. So this prompts the writer as he sees this, he's asking the Lord why. Why is this happening to his nation? Because in all reality, if you look at their history, this couldn't happen to Israel unless God said, okay, or unless God was bringing, or of course God would be bringing judgment on them because they've sinned. And that's what we're going to look at here in just a little bit. I think it's okay to ask the Lord why, as long as it's done with faith and respectfully. I mean, you can ask why in an angry, like he's done something wrong manner. And you can ask him why in order to gain wisdom so that you can deal with the situation. You see what I mean? I think there's different ways that people ask why. There's been times that I've asked the Lord why because I was mad at him. And then there's been other times I've asked the Lord why so that I could help see the purpose of it so that I could better serve him and bring him glory in it. Does that make more sense to you? I think this is what this means in James 1. I've got to watch about running trails. James chapter 1. James chapter 1 talks about trials. In verse 2 of James 1, it says, to count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations. Well, that's difficult, isn't it? It didn't say it has a warm, fuzzy feeling about it. You can't have a warm, fuzzy feeling about a trial, especially if it's difficult. But it says to count it that way, to count it joy. Because verse 3, knowing that the trying of your faith worketh patience, knowing, second of all, you count it joy because God's working in some fashion. And one thing he works is patience. What is patience in this verse? That means endurance. It gives you endurance and strength. Verse 5, but if any of you lack wisdom, if any of you lack wisdom, James 1 and verse 5, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. Let him ask of God who giveth to all men liberally. So if somebody lacks wisdom in their trial, they're encouraged to ask God. That's the wisdom that it's talking about. Then I believe it's okay for us to say, Master, why is this? Why have you permitted this? I know that you're good and righteous and just. And Master, help me to give me strength to hold up. And also, but give me wisdom to use this in the way that you would have me use it in. Okay? So I think it's proper that we ask the Lord to give us wisdom. And I think that's the idea of, when I talked about asking why in a good way, that's what I was talking about. Because I can think you can also ask why in a faithless way, like God is being unjust, and he's always good. And back to Psalms 74. The writer of this psalm, again, we know from last week, it says a maskil. That means it's a teaching psalm, down to teach a basic lesson. A maskil of Asaph. A maskil of Asaph. Now, there's only problem with that is Asaph was a contemporary with King David. And there wasn't even there was a sanctuary there. There was a tabernacle there. There wasn't no temple there. And certainly it wasn't burnt. Nobody burning up to my knowledge. Now, what's depicted in the text is a destruction of the sanctuary. A burning of it. Tearing it down with axes and things is pictured in the text. Enemies being in Jerusalem with their banners and things. And most of the writers think that it's referring to the destruction of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian. But it's hard to say. You can't say for any certainty, but most people think this psalm is describing the coming. I mean, this would be 400 or 500 years in the future. Destruction of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar or even by the Romans. But it doesn't say, does it? But it does describe a destruction, and the problem with it is Asaph's the writer. And that's all the way back in David's day. That's way in the future when those destructions happened. I mean, the temple wasn't even built yet in Asaph's day. All right? One thing that may rectify that is the fact, if you'll remember last week in 2 Chronicles 29 and 30, we're not going to turn there, but you remember this, Asaph was also a seer. What does that mean, a seer? He's a prophet. A seer is a prophet, someone that dreamed dreams. So I'm of the opinion that this psalm is prophetic. I think it was written by the Asaph, but I think him being a prophet, the Lord obviously is having them write a hymn that would remind them of destruction one day. A nation needs a hymn like this because you can get to thinking that you're unconquerable. And you can get self-satisfied. And a hymn like this is very good for a nation to remember. Because certainly it would indeed come to pass. So I think it was written by Asaph, the Asaph. And I think it's a prophetic in its nature. All right, let me give you the outline to it. Verses 1 through 3, the call. The call, he's making a call out to the Lord. Verses 4 through 11 is the enemy. Verses 12 through 17 is the king. And then verses 18 through 23 is the plea. He's making a final plea to the Lord. Okay, let's pick up at verse 1. O God, why hast thou cast us off forever? Why doth thou thine anger smoke against the sheep of thy pasture? Now, you'll notice from verse 1, the psalmist recognized the fact that the reason why all of these catastrophes were happening in his land was a direct result of God's wrath upon the people. And if his wrath was on the people, then that was a good explanation of why these armies had came into their land. God was the defender of Israel. He's the one that defended them. And he's the one that went forth with their armies to battle. And they were a tremendous fighting force when their God was with them. They were really nothing without the Lord. I mean, when they conquered the Canaanite nations, which they had the walled cities, they had the giants, they had the chariots, they had all the equipment. And all the children of Israel was, to be honest with you, I'm not being disrespectful, but they were basically a bunch of shepherds and farmers. That's what they were. And they were just infantry. They didn't have chariots or horses or none of the modern equipment. Yet, they walked right through, in Joshua's day, walked right through the Canaanite nations. And you'll remember in the book of Deuteronomy, they conquered nations that were greater and mightier than themselves. And the reason why they did that is because God fought for them. So when they were defeated in battle, and a nation came in amongst them, then it was usually, you knew what lied at the door is sin lied at the door. The nation had somehow, every time you can see it in the prophets, they would turn away from the Lord, and then they begin to worship false gods. Verse 45 says of Deuteronomy chapter 28, moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee, and shall pursue thee and overtake thee till thou be destroyed, because thou hearken not unto the voice of the Lord thy God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded thee. And this shall be a sign unto thee, a sign for a wonder, and upon thy seed forever, because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and with gladness of thy heart for the abundance of all these things. So whenever an enemy would come into the land, and the psalmist recognized it, it was because of their sin. They would turn away from the Lord. They'd turn away from Him. And their greatest defense was their God. Now, we need to learn that lesson ourselves as a nation. We're proud of our military, obviously, and that if you're not careful, you get to thinking that we as a nation are invincible, that there's nobody can stand before us because we have all the power. Well, who made our nation great was who the God of this nation is. God's the one that made this nation great. Look at Psalms 127, verse 1 says, "Unless the Lord keeps the city, then the watchman watches, but in vain." And you have a picture of a city makes all the preparation by putting watchmen on the top of their forts, the towers and things that they used in their walled cities. He says, unless the Lord keeps that city, it don't make any difference. It don't make any difference how many watchmen you put up there. You watch, but in vain. Safety is of the Lord, the book of Proverbs chapter 21, verse 31 says. Safety is of the Lord. Look at Psalms chapter 33. Such attitudes with regards to such things as this scares me to death, to be honest with you. The thought that we're invincible and things of that nature, that we're not invincible. There's been a lot of nations that thought they were invincible. Babylon thought they were. The Medes and the Persians thought they were. The Greeks thought they were. The Romans thought they were. They were great nations. And they looked invincible, but you see, God had, in the book of Daniel, had each one of their times were numbered. And then God brought them to an end. Psalms chapter 33, verse 16 says, "There is no king that is saved by the multitude of a host. A mighty man is not delivered by much strength. A horse is a vain thing for safety, neither shall he deliver by his great strength. Behold, the eye of the Lord is upon them to fear him, and upon them that hope in his mercy to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine." Israel's hope was the Lord. Israel's defense was the Lord. Israel's victory in battle was because of the Lord. And that's the same thing is true of our land. Same thing is true of our land. We need to pray every day about the war that we're in. We're at war in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And we need to pray every day about that. We got people going over there. We have people have sons and daughters over there that are fighting. And we need to pray like they're your sons and daughters. But we take that for granted because in the back of our mind we think we're invincible. We got all the weapons. We got all these things. Well, folks, it's went on a long time, hasn't it? The Lord's able to bring it to a stop and pray for us, for our leaders, but pray for our people that's over there. The Lord's the one that gives victory in time of war, and He's the one that's gave us the victories that we have enjoyed, too. Verse 2, "Remember thy congregation. Remember them, which thou hast purchased of old, the rod of your inheritance, which thou hast redeemed. This Mount Zion where thou hast dwelt," he reminds. Of course, the Lord don't need reminded, does he? He's just mentioning some truths here. In the past, the nation of Israel, that was his congregation. Those were his people. He had redeemed them. He had set them free from the bondage of Egypt. And he's focusing and looking back at what the Lord had done in the past. And he's reminded how the Lord had set them apart from the nation of Egypt and had delivered them out of Egypt. Now he says, "Lift up your feet into the perpetual desolations." You know he's saying, "Lord, come and see. Come and see what's going on." Lift up your feet just simply means walk over here and look. Carries the idea of that. Lord, come and see what's going on. Now, did the Lord know? He sure did. But remember, this is a song. We're to come and see the desolation. You see, it describes desolations that the enemy hath done wickedly in the sanctuary. So verses 1 through 3 is his call. He's calling upon the Lord he's asking the Lord why. He's calling upon the Lord to come and to intercede in the situation that his nation is in. They're in a calamity. They're in a mess. And then in verses 4 through verse 11, he describes what the enemy had done. He describes the mess that they're in. And you can imagine if this was you and it was your nation, you can imagine how bad indeed it would make you feel. We take so many things for granted. Man, we live in a time of wars and rumors of wars and famines and pestilence and sicknesses and all those things. And look what the Lord has done for this land. Look what the Lord has done. He's made us, as the book of Deuteronomy said, the head, not the tail. He's blessed our economy. He's blessed our agriculture. He's blessed so many things. All you ever really hear people do is quarrel about things, but the Lord's blessed this land. I'd like to take all the quarrelers and stick them over in some of these foreign countries and let them live for 6 months. And then let them come back here and quarrel about the economy and quarrel about this and quarrel about that. Ask Brother Cecil. He's been about almost every nation in the world and asked about the economies. How many people own cars? How many people own their own houses? How many people have all these things? You don't realize how blessed we are. I mean, we can go to the grocery store and bring food home and eat it. Many of these countries over, they have to bullet. We went to this thing for that when they're going to Kenya. It shows a big heater over there where Brother Mike Anderson's at, where they boil their water. They just can't drink water out of the faucet. They have to boil everything and things. And you can get deathly sick if you... I remember some got deathly sick off eating something because they washed the food with the water. And the water got the parasites on it and made them all sick. Much of this we don't have here. Because the Lord has blessed this land tremendously. And we need to thank the Lord for that and realize what we have. We have freedom to worship. You don't have this in a lot of the other nations, the Muslim nations and things. You don't have that. You go over there and put yourself in some of those countries, and they put you, if they would, they won't put you on the radio if you're a Christian. But if they would, they'd kill you and your family. So there's great persecution there. So here, listen to the enemies. It says, "Thy enemies roar in the midst of your congregation. They set up their ensigns for signs." In other words, in amongst the nation was the banners of the enemy. Wouldn't it be sad to even think of that? Here's the banners of an enemy, and now they're being set up right there amongst the nation. That's what the psalmist saw. And it says, "A man is famous according as he's lifted up an axe upon the thick trees. And they broke down the carved work thereof at once with axes and hammers." You see, you have a picture of them tearing things down and destroying things. Verse 7 says, "They've cast fire into thy sanctuary." They burn up the place of worship, temple, tabernacle, but anyway, they burn it up. They casted fire to it. Now, you can look in the book of 2 Chronicles, Nebuchadnezzar burnt the temple. He set it on fire. They took all the gold, naturally, out of it. I forget, about $1 billion is what the Solomon's temple was worth. They took the gold, but they burnt the rest of it. They burn it up. They burn it down. So it could be referring to that. But you have a picture of the enemy. He set up his standards in their nation. And now he's burning the sanctuary of the Lord. Now, if you've ever done any studying in the book of Jeremiah 7, one of the things they thought is they thought they would never be whipped as a nation. One reason was because the temple was there. And in the book of Jeremiah 7, he said, "Don't you trust in lying words." If they had prophets saying, "The temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord is here." They thought Jerusalem would always be protected because the house of God was there. And here you see, hey, that was a building. What gave it its power and made it unique was God lived there or manifested His presence there. But that still didn't stop whenever they sinned against the Lord and turned their back on the Lord. That still didn't stop the enemy from going in and completely destroying it. It destroyed the sanctuary. Verse 8. They said in their hearts, "Let us destroy them together." And they have burned up all the synagogues of God in the land. Now, it mentioned synagogue. The word synagogue here, I don't know if it's the same thing you have in the New Testament synagogues. Most think the synagogues grew out of the Babylonian captivity. But it could not also be out of order to think that in a lot of the cities in Israel, they would have meeting places for prayer either. And the idea of this word synagogue is meeting places. It's translated in verse 4, congregations. So I imagine that they had meeting places for prayer, don't you? I mean, the temple was the place for their sacrifices. They wouldn't have offered sacrifices there, but they would be probably meeting places for prayer, maybe sharing of the Scriptures. Well, it says that they burnt those up too. In other words, all visible signs, tokens of Israel's religion, they're destroying it. And they're bringing it all down to the ground, so as not to leave any evidence of the Jews' religion whatsoever. That's what they was trying to do, by destroying the temple and by destroying all the other places of worship. That's what they wanted to do. Of course, you can't destroy what's in a person's heart, can you? They took Daniel, Hananiah, Shananiah, and Azariah. They took them to Babylon. Temple was destroyed. The places of worship was destroyed. But they still served their God, didn't they? They still were faithful to the Lord. You can't destroy what's in their heart. Well, folks, I want to say something about this text. Here was an attempt by the enemy to destroy any outward tokens of religion. All the sanctuaries they destroy. And we don't have an invading army coming into our land, do we? Aren't you glad? Thank God we don't. God's protected us. And take heed, though. Take heed as the nation continues to turn against God. Then surely judgment comes. Surely judgment comes. Well, I think there's an attempt in our land, and I don't know if you agree with me, but you think about it. I think there's clearly an attempt in our land to destroy all outward tokens of Christianity. I think there's a great attempt to do that. Now, I don't think there's an invading army coming into it, but I think the enemy, which is the devil, is seeking in our land to destroy any type of representation of Christ, trying to wipe that out of public view. And I'll mention some things when you think about it. Of course, you're not supposed to pray publicly in schools. Now, children can. I believe the students can if they choose to, which is good. And you can't stop anybody from praying silently either. You can pray. But just the fact that in a lot of places you can't say a prayer at a football game or a basketball game, that's outlawed in our land. Isn't that sad? Isn't that sad? And you never thought, you know, maybe 50 years ago you'd ever see that, but they don't want that. They don't want that in the name of so-called separation of church and state. Don't pray. Boy, they didn't have no trouble encouraging everybody to pray on 9/12. On the day after 9/11, pray, pray, pray. And that lasted about a week, and then they went back to exactly in the rebellious way they was before. Okay? Don't want no public prayer. Big deal about the commandments too, aren't they? Don't want the commandments on public buildings. See, they're trying to destroy any kind of token of our religion, Christianity. Not so much the other religions, but Christianity. Have you noticed it? Any outward manifestation of it, any token of it. Manger scenes, that's always a big deal Christmas time. Always see someone's got a lawsuit over a manger scene. You're not supposed to teach abstinence in school. You know the best in dealing with the premarital sex problem amongst teenagers? Teens become pregnant every year in our land. Probably worse than that now. Okay? 400,000 of them will have an abortion. We realize that's an epidemic in our land. And one of the best things to do is teach children what? Abstinence. There's only one institution that teaches that, and that's the Lord's church. But you can't teach abstinence in school. Why? Separation of churches. Yeah, you don't want to teach religion in school. Don't want to teach religion in school. So that's out. You can't teach creation there either, at least as an honorable or as a with evolution. And when creationism is more scientific than evolution, as we've talked about earlier in the year, creationism's out. He's out there. Fighting over the Pledge of Allegiance because it has that terrible G word in it. One nation under God. So do you see the attempt? You see all the fighting and the turmoil? You can see and hear those things on the news. It's just like an invading army's coming in and trying to destroy any outward token of God. And I see that. I pray that you can see that too. Turn to the book of Hosea chapter 4. That's just outward tokens. And those things alarm me. I think it's evidence of a downward trend. Look at Hosea. That's a hard one to find, the minor prophets. Chapter 4. So there is this attempt to destroy everything on the outside, burn every token. That's what they're trying to do in Psalm 74, except it was literally with fire. We're doing it with laws, so-called. Get them all out. We don't want them. We don't, crying out loud, we don't want. You know, been a lot of people killed over a manger scene. Ridiculous stuff that people fight over. Just sad. Just sad, sad state of affairs. Verse 1 of Hosea 4. Hear the word of the Lord, ye children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land. Would you agree that if the Lord has a controversy with your land, that you're in trouble? You're in bad shape when the Lord's got a controversy with you. Now, it lists in the following verses what he had a controversy. Now, who he had a controversy with in this text is with Israel. And he says, look at verse 2, by swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood touches blood. Therefore shall the land mourn, and everyone that dwelleth therein shall languish with the beasts of the field, with the fowls of the heaven. Yea, the fishes of the sea also shall be taken away. Let no man strive nor reprove another, for thy people are they that strive with the priest. It means the people wouldn't listen. If someone would come and preach against the sin that they were doing, they would strive against them and they would consider them enemies. Oh man, you publicly preach against sin today and watch them rip you to shreds. You watch them rip you to shreds in the papers and in the newscasts and things. Verse 5. Therefore thou shalt fall in the day, the prophet also will fail with thee. My people, verse 6, are destroyed for lack of knowledge. That's knowledge of the Lord. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will reject thee, and thou shalt be no priest to me, seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God, I will forget thy children. As they were increased, so they sinned against me. Now, does that sound familiar to you? As they were increased, they sinned against me. And that's what's happened to our land. It is a progressive downhill slide of forgetting God. It's not forgetting that there is a God. It's taking His word and casting it behind their backs and doing whatever they want to do. That's forgetting God. And that's what you see this nation doing as a whole. And it's not getting any better. It's getting worse. And it's alarming. I don't know. Brother Raines might not remember this, but I had a conversation with him years ago. And y'all's going to think I'm odd for what I'm about to say, but maybe Brother Raines will back me on the thing anyway. He talked to an old man years ago. And he came in his house. I don't know if it's your house or some house, but there's a television set there. And he said, well, I see you got the devil in the corner over there. Is that right there? Well, close to right anyway, wasn't it, Brother Raines? And I tell you what, I believe that that's what the devil has used to cause the most damage in our land. I really believe that. Now, I know y'all think I'm a nut, but I think that's how he's done it. That's given him the ability to reach right in people's homes and influence the way people talk, the way people dress. What sets the modern dress apparel today? Does anybody know? Is it the Baptist church? It's what people see on there. Why does young kids learn to cuss at 4 and 5 years old? You ever notice it? Filthy talk. Because they sit in front of that thing. That's their babysitter. They sit in front of it 5 hours a day. And they see things that they haven't got. It's given Satan the ability to reach right inside the homes and corrupt. And shows that you watch, they're preaching. They don't stop to tell you that this is sin. And this that you're doing will ruin your life. It just constantly depicts sin. And you constantly put that before people's eyes. And it'll affect the way that they think and affect the way that they do. I think it's corrupted our whole land. I really do. And I think it's reached in, not only corrupted the land, but reached and corrupted God's people too. I think God's people watch things today that 50 years ago they'd have never thought about watching. I noticed shows that I thought were questionable when I was growing up are now on the Family Channel. Because things have got that corrupt. And we've lost grips on it. It's done out of control. Psalms 101 verse 3 says, I'll set no wicked thing before my eyes. I'm telling you, these shows preach. They preach adultery, fornication, drunkenness. They preach all of those things. Ask yourself what they're saying when you're watching. Ask yourself what it's teaching. And I'm telling you to limit what you was watching. I was watching something the other day, and I said, I ain't never watching this again. Last time. Big show, had a homosexual in it. God made you that way. Then it depicted someone that stood against it as a nut. It preached. Thousands upon thousands watched it, and they sent a message. There wasn't nothing to correct it. Watching it junk. We got to have a little bit more standards about ourselves and what we watch. Oh, it's killing us. It's killing the church. It's killing the powers in the church too. It's hypocrisy to the core. And not only can they reach you through the television, now they can reach you through the internet too. The internet's a wonderful thing we're using as a tool, but it's a dangerous thing too. You better set all kinds of standards with regard to that. I forget the number of, it's on sermon audio on the news part of it. It was in the Southern Baptist Convention, how many missionaries they rejected because of pornography on the internet. Oh my, folks, I'm telling you, Brother Raines, I agree with that old man. I think it's corrupted the whole nation. And I think that's how it's done it. I think that's one of the ways, I think that's the main way Satan's done it. And it's just glamorized sin, popularized sin, and it's pumped it in front of people's eyes so much. I mean, we used to sing songs, little kids, be careful, little eyes, what you see. And doesn't that sound stupid to sing it? It's not stupid. What you see corrupts the way that you think. If you can get you thinking bad, then in time it can get you doing bad. I don't know, folks. It's just, I think that's one of the things that's happened. I don't know how I ended up there, but I'm telling you, I think that's one of the things that's caused things to corrupt in our land. And it's a constant struggle that each one of us has to make. And little kids, I'm going to tell you right now, little kids are watching things that they don't have no business watching. Let's turn back to Psalms. I don't know, Lord. I don't know how long the Lord's going to put up with it. There is no sense of urgency. There is no sense of urgency on nobody's part. We just think it's all, we just get dumb and happy, I guess, and just think it's going to continue this way. It can't continue. It can't continue at the state that it's in. It can't. If you know the prophets, if you studied the prophets, and we studied the prophets together, Amos, Hosea, Isaiah, for what we're doing, God brought judgment on many nations. And we're doing to a higher degree than they did. Yet, there's no sense of urgency. Everything's fine. No, it's not. We need to pray for our land every day of our lives. God, forgive us, intercede, forgive us, and bring a revival and things of that nature. Deliver us out of this situation. Pray for our leaders. And God's people need to pray. But in order for God's people to pray, God's people have to turn from their own wicked ways themselves. And that's why it's got the way that it has. Oh my, can you see the progressive trend downhill? Just in stinking commercials. I know I run this in the ground. Just in commercials. Commercials embarrassing. There's commercials I wouldn't even want to be sitting around in mixed company to see. I have found that the less and less and less you watch a TV, the more spiritual you'll become. Try it and see. The less you turn that stupid thing on, the more spiritual you'll become. That thing before you, it you become so desensitized to what you see and hear that you don't realize what's wrong. Through that thing's how homosexuality got accepted in our land anyway. What it done is it put it on television at first and just made it a big joke. And you laugh at sin long enough, then it don't get to be sin anymore. It's what they've done. And they're tearing down all these outward manifestations of religion. And then, not only that, then in turn they're sending all their corrupt messages right through the screen, right into your home. And then we're sitting there sucking it in like this and say, well, I haven't got time to read my Bible. And wondering which one's going to be the most influence on us. Crying out loud, 5 hours of television. You can't even give the Lord 5 minutes of Bible study. And our land reflects that type of spirituality too. Oh, God's people said. All right. All right, let's move on. You think I'm right? I think I'm right. They destroyed the synagogues, see? Verse 9 says, we see not our signs. Now, the actual idea of that was just like in verse 4. The enemy set up their banners, but there wasn't no national emblems of their land there no more. They destroyed them all. Wouldn't it be awful? Old stars and stripes wouldn't be. I mean, all of them's gone, see? And then the banners of these enemies are set up. If you don't mind, I'd like to apply this another way. A lot of times nations don't see the signs of judgment beginning either. And as I've told you before, anytime I deal with something along this line, there is signs that judgment has began already on our land. And let's turn to Romans 1 again for the millionth time. That's all right. You can show it to people. Romans chapter 1. As you read down in the text, it says this in verse 24. It says, God gave them up. Everybody see that in verse 24? God also gave them up. Now that's the worst thing that can ever happen to a land or a people, is for God to just... See, there's a certain amount, what you need to understand, there's a certain amount of sin God will restrain. God will have a restraining hand on things, see? But as a nation continually doesn't want nothing to do with God, they throw him out, they want him out of everything, see? And then you know what the Lord does? He lets it go. All right? And when He lets it go, it corrupts in the worst way. Okay? He says it again in verse 26. For this cause God gave them up. Now when God gives a nation up, here's what you see happen. Verse 26 says, vile affections, even their women change the natural use unto that which is against nature. That's homosexuality. That's one of the telltale sins in the land. Whenever the Lord gives a nation, when He removes His hand, that's what you see become prevalent. Again, folks say all the time, God will bring judgment on land for homosexuality. Homosexuality is a judgment on a land. It's a sign that it's already began, that God has removed His restraining hand. Because that's one of the sins that you see creep up. Let's read on. Verse 28, even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind. You know what a reprobate mind is? It's a mind that can't discern right from wrong. A mind that calls evil good and good evil. We don't see that, do we? You put me on Larry King Live, they'd eat me alive. And I would be put on in the paper as an absolute Neanderthal. Not that there is such a thing. Because in America's mainstream, so-called, that is the public life, they call evil good. They do. And you call sin sin, they'll nail on the cross for it. Ever watch how people dance around sin when they're on these shows? Oh my. Let's read on verse 29. Being filled with all unrighteousness and fornication. Fornication is one of the signs that the nation's been given up. We don't have no trouble with fornication in our land. Only 80% of young men by the time they're out of high school have committed fornication, 70% of the young women. That's not bad, is it? Wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents. Well, there ain't no trouble with that, are they? Go to Walmart and watch. Women get going around with their children. You got a little child about this tall, and they're calling, "I hate you, Mom." I ain't doing all these types of things. Now, don't you say that. You ever watch the women or the men that's watching dads do this and count? Now, don't you do that. I'm going to count. And they start counting. I'd like to say, simpleton, don't you realize they know you're going to go to eight? They know how long you're going to count for. You need the discipline. They'll know if you discipline immediately. Old timers, all they had to do was give you the look. Because you knew just as soon as that eye batted, you know the rod of correction would drop. All they had to do was look. Y'all know what I'm saying? You know that's because they didn't count. Great day in the morning. I ain't gonna go there. I'm hot. I'm so aggravated preaching. I don't like to get that way, but I don't you see these things? I don't think I'm off base with this, but I think the signs and the evidence that judgment has started is here. But I guess there just don't seem to be no kind of sense of urgency about it. And I don't think we see our signs. See. Let's go back and finish Psalm 74. That is where we're at, isn't it? Well, in reality, I stayed in context. I just applied the text. All right. Oh, folks, I'm going to wrap this up. Verses 12 through 17, the psalmist now focuses on the king. And in a calamity, that's the only place you'll ever find rest at. It's by focusing on the king. That's the only thing that'll carry you up. That's the only thing that'll do. It's not a preacher. And whenever I do try to help folks, I try to get them up to the king. You can't do nothing, without the Lord. And you need to get people's mind on the king. That's what he does. He focuses on the king in verses 12 through 17. For God is my king of old. Can you say that tonight? He's my king of old. You see how personal that is? He's my king. And I'm thankful tonight. You know, circumstances get bad at times, but I tell you one thing will never change is God will still be my king. 100 years from now, God will still be my king. That's something will never change. A lot of things change here on this earth, but one thing never changes, and that's God your king. All right. Thou art my king of old, working salvation. Now what he does in verses 13 through 17 is he looks at God's mighty works in the past. Thou didst divide the sea with thy strength. Thou breakest the heads of the dragons in the waters, and thou breakest the heads of the Leviathan in pieces. I think that's referring to Pharaoh and his armies in a figurative way. And he gave them to be meat to the people inhabiting the wilderness. Thou didst cleave the fountain and the flood. He parted the Jordan River too, at flood stage, I may add. Plus he gave them water out of a rock in the wilderness. Verse 16, the day is thine, the night is thine. Thou hast prepared the light. Now I want you to notice it says both of those. Thou hast prepared the light and the sun. You see, that light's independent of the sun, isn't it? Lord did that. Lord did that. Thou set the borders of the earth. That's the borders for the nations. Thou hast made summer and winter. He's the one established the seasons. He's done all that. So what he's doing is he's looking at what all God has done, his mighty hand and his mighty works. It helps me sometimes to remember that the God that I serve is the God that parted the Red Sea. I wasn't there or anything, but he's a powerful God. They were in a bad situation there. They were trapped. It looked hopeless. It looked hopeless. If you'd have been there, you'd have fell apart, and I would have too. They were backed up against the sea. And they had mountains on either side of them. And right here come the greatest army, so-called, walking planet Earth. And that was Pharaoh's army, see, with their chariots. I'd hate to have been in that situation unless he'd have told me what he was going to do. That old fire, pillar of fire, moved back and got between his people and them. And God parted it right down the middle. We serve a great God. And sometimes it does you good to go back and look at some of the great. He's the one that established the seasons. You know why we have our seasons? You learned this in science or whatever. The earth is tilted 23 degrees. That causes us to have our season. Do you know who? Isn't it lucky that it happened to tilt that way after the big explosion? Folks, it takes more faith to believe that than believe that God put her there and tilted it that way. It was the designer that done all these things. So it focuses his attention on his God. Then in the latter part, verses 18 through 23, he makes his final plea for the Lord to come and intercede. And he does it because they blaspheme God's name. He mentions that about two or three times in that area. They've spoke against the Lord. They do that. One bad thing about getting conquered, if you got conquered, that made them think their God was stronger than your God. And they would speak, hey, look here, you're serving this Jehovah. We destroyed his temple. And they would strut and speak evil against the Lord. Belshazzar did that in the book of Daniel. He took and he took the articles out of the Lord's temple and put wine in them, and they got drunk and praised the gods of metal and gold. And suddenly in a hand started writing on the wall. Nebuchadnezzar got blowed up with all of his pride. Next thing he knew, he was out eating grass in a field like an ox. God showed the Babylonians who the true God was. So they'd do that. Well, that's the psalm tonight. We see this destruction. It's prophetic, I think. I think Asaph writes it in a prophetic manner. And it literally was fulfilled a couple times in their land. How does it apply to us? We need to take heed to it. I think the warning, we need to take heed to ourselves. And we need to make a special effort tonight, not only tonight, but every day to mention our land to the Lord. Remember our leaders. Remember our leaders in prayer. The Lord would direct our path and things. Do that. Let's all stand. Thank you for your attention. Appreciate you putting up with me this evening. I feel a lot better.